now the rest of the story.
The rest of the story.
Sounds like I got that cough. Who's that? Who's that doctor?
Escrow.
Joe's probably got his surgery equipment with him. He could do that tonight. Anyway, my name's Gene, and I'm an acceptable, responsible, and productive member of Narcotics Anonymous. I only say that because it's true. And I only say it's true is because that's what Narcotics Anonymous has promised us. Thing that I don't want to tell you is that it took me 23 years to become acceptable, responsible, and productive. And for my misuse of Narcotics Anonymous, I am responsible. And the things that I did for Narcotics Anonymous in those first 23 years, not all of those years, but toward the end of those years, I failed to perform my duties for Narcotics Anonymous. And because of that, some people didn't come. And they died. And I don't know who they were. But they died. Because I had lost my commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. And that, for that, I am responsible. I'm responsible for every word that I speak. Every action that I take. And that's got to my heart. So I'm careful now about what I say, about how I act, about who I talk to. My story was taken out of the basic text, the sixth edition, called The Vicious Cycle. When I wrote that story, was in the early 60s. I didn't have much to say. It was a short story. But now I've got a lot to say. Because I wrote an update to that story. It's called Tarnished Recovery. Not a pretty story. But it ends up really good because I'm here. And I'm here with my friend. And I'm here with all these new friends. And I'm blessed. I have met so many wonderful people here. This weekend, and I feel the spirit here, the spirit of love, spirit of respect, a spirit of honor for our program and for the men, and especially for the women in Narcotics Anonymous. I want to tell you about the women in Narcotics Anonymous. And what they really did. You never hear about that. But I love women. I really do. I love them with a passion. And I'll tell you why. My mother was a woman. And I never failed to respect her. And I, in Narcotics Anonymous, when I hear language that disrespects women, I'm hurt. I'm really hurt. Because I remember all the things that I did that was disrespectful to Narcotics Anonymous, and how many people didn't come because I wasn't there doing my job. And because of that, many people died. And for that, I am responsible. And I'll tell you what I did. I love my mother. My mother left when I was 14. And she didn't leave in a very nice way. She hung herself in the Yuba County Jail in California. But you know, I reconnected with my mother just recently. And about 5 years ago, I had a house that I was renting to some people. And I decided I was going to dedicate that house to my mother. So I called it my mama's house. And this is the dedication. My mama's house, 340 West Nevada Street, Ashland, Oregon, where the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting started in that home in 1974. While women weep, as they do now, I'll fight. While little children go hungry, as they do now, I'll fight. While men go to prison, in and out, as they do now, I'll fight. While there is a drunkard left, or an addict, while there is a poor, lost girl upon the streets, while there remains one dark soul without the light of God, I'll fight to the very end. That's my mama's house. And Joe, Indiana Joe, and Tacoma Tom and myself have a project, a history project. And it's a shame that Tacoma Tom is not here, but Tacoma Tom is at my mama's house right now, putting new carpet and new tile. Tiling the kitchen floor. And on the front floor, as you open the door, there's ingrained in the tile, and it says my mama's house. And it has a little angel there with a little rose. Magnificent piece of artwork. Anyway, that's a little bit about where my heart is. But the reason that I'm here. Also, another statement that I like to make about who I am. I have a mentor. And the mentor wrote a song. The mentor was the man in black. And that's why I wear black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old addicts that are living on the hungry side of town. I wear it for those that have never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Well, you think he's talking right to you and me. I wear it for the sick and lonely old in Narcotics Anonymous. And for those whose bad trip left them cold, I wear it for the lives that could have been in Narcotics Anonymous. That's from a song by Johnny Cash. But that's who I am. That's my heart. I don't wear flashy stuff. I don't want to be recognized. I don't want to bring attention to me. But I want people to know where my heart is. My heart is with the only lonely old. My heart is with the addict that still suffers. And the addict that still suffers is not always the newcomer. It's the old timer. The old timer. And tonight, I'm going to change my shirt. And I'm going to show you a shirt that has eternal significance for Narcotics Anonymous. And it's called the History Project. The History Project. The History Project. Indiana Joe, Tacoma Tom, and myself are the history gypsies. And that's why we're here. But you know what? I have something to offer to that project that nobody else can offer. But I could do absolutely nothing alone. Joe has something to offer that I could never offer, I could never do. He has international connections with people all over the country. Now he has a shirt on right now about the convention in Nepal, Mount Everest. He's connected with those people. Last weekend, we had people staying in my home. Singapore Sam and his Chinese wife, explaining, for two nights they stayed with us. We recorded 2 hours of conversation with him about how NA is spreading through Asia. I didn't plan on doing this. I didn't plan on any things that happened. I didn't plan on Joe making a mistake on the internet and all of a sudden putting something out to the whole NA world. It was a mistake. But it was a blessing to Narcotics Anonymous. It was our higher power telling Joe, hey man, it's time for you to get to work. And with that mistake on the internet, pressing a button that put a message out to an entire population of Narcotics Anonymous, Joe now has a job that he'll never finish. And Tommy, I may need an engineer here to get this thing on. Are there any engineers in the house? Hey, where's the engineer? I get it. I don't need you. Why don't you come running up here? But I'll tell you, this convention is going to catapult Narcotics Anonymous into a new spiritual dimension. The magnitude of what's happening here this weekend is beyond parallel. Nothing to match it. There's never been a convention that I've ever attended that's been this sincere, this honest, this heartfelt, this full of love and respect and honor for its people and for NA as a whole. But I have to tell you, I just had a report. Oh man, this is terrible. A security alert from Portland, Oregon. Port of Portland's T6 security alert. That's in the, you know, where all the ships come in and everything. We have been notified by the Port of Portland security that there has been 4 suspected terrorists working in the Port of Portland T6 facility. 3 of the 4 have been apprehended. Been sleeping, been loafing, and been drinking have been taken into custody. Security advises us that they have scoured the entire port but could not find no one fitting the description of the 4th cell member. Been working. Police are confident that anyone who looks like he's been working will be easy to spot. Officials report that they haven't seen anyone who even resembles been working, but they have heard of one called Ben Hyden, who has friends known as Ben Lying, Ben Cheating, and Ben Crying. The last 3 are of no any danger to the U.S., except they make you want to listen to country music. So, thank you, your security representative. So, I'm not going to rush home. I think they'll be okay without me. So anyway, now the rest of the story. We're a peculiar people. But we're a chosen generation. My God, what an honor to be part of something of this magnitude. It's changing the world. Changing the world. And we're part of it, every single one of us. And the people. From the people with less than a month to those with 48, 50 years. Magnificent thing that's happening. Well, I'm sort of like Nolan. He's a couple years younger than I, but he can't remember things, and neither can I. So I'm 76. If anybody wants to know, so you know when I told you about what I had. Problems I had for 23 years. Big problem was my pride. I love to tell people what I had accomplished in Narcotics Anonymous. I went to school, got a little education, got a good job with the federal government. I was in mid-management. I was in charge of 125 people. I had a couple supervisors working for me. I like to tell everybody about that. And I'm going to tell you, but I'm not going to tell you that I got fired. Because I was a thief. And that's part of my tarnished recovery. Not a pretty thing. I had the freedom. Fourth tradition says we have the freedom. But we don't have the freedom to hurt ourselves or hurt our families or hurt Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. With freedom comes responsibility. Yeah. Because I've got such a tremendous ego and pride and self-centeredness and greed and everything. It's like an addiction. It never leaves you. It always pops its ugly head. And so I have a little saying that I have to read constantly. all the time. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. But that's not the important part. This is the important part, and this is why I need to read this before I speak. Lord, I'm too much influenced by what people think of me, which means I am always pretending to be either richer or smarter or nicer than I really am. I fooled a lot of people here tonight. Please prevent me from trying to attract attention. It's hard not to do that when you're doing what I'm doing. But people tell me, my good friend Kathy and Tatiana, oh, you'll be great. You'll be great tonight. Joel told me, you'll be great tonight. They miss one point. I'm not going to be great, but what I say is going to be great. And that's nothing to do with who I am. That has everything to do with my experience in Narcotics Anonymous. I am not going to be great. I don't want to be great. If I was great, I'd probably blow my brains out. You know? I don't want to be. When you're great, you have a tremendous amount of pressure. And all I want is peace and quiet, just like Nolan says. Don't let me gloat over praise on one hand or be discouraged by criticism on the other. Like some guy, Joe and I were talking to an old-timer here, and we had a discussion, and this guy just criticized the hell out of me, you know? And because of my feeling about people coming back in the Narcotics Anonymous that had left and come back. And so I let him criticize. And I really felt this. I wasn't saying this just to, you know, make him feel good. I says, I agree with you 100% because you've got a love and a dedication for Narcotics Anonymous like I've never seen before. This guy was so intense about his commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. I says, I admire you for that. I just don't agree with what you do. And I told him about my feelings about people coming back into Narcotics Anonymous after they left. And he agreed with me. And he respected me for my opinion. Now that's Narcotics Anonymous. Love one for another. Even we're in opposite ends, opposition. Let me waste time weaving imaginary situations in which the heroic, charming, witty person is myself. Show me how to be humble of heart like you. That's what I need. If I got that, I got everything. It's not about me. It's about what my higher power, a Jewish carpenter, is putting into my heart to come out of my mouth. That's what it's all about. It's not about me. So, anyway, I like intelligent people. I like people that are smart. And so I read about people that are smart, and I admire people that are smart, like your founder and my founder and your savior and my savior who saved our lives, Jimmy Kennan, founder of Narcotics Anonymous. And here's another guy that was a wise guy. Probably the wisest guy that ever lived. His name was Solomon. Never met the guy, thank God. I wouldn't be here today. But pretty wise guy. And listen to what he said. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. And a time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear down and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. And I added, a time to be the NA teacher. A time to be the NA student. And tonight, I'm a teacher and a student. Both. But you know what? So are you. So are you. There's nobody in Narcotics Anonymous that's not a teacher or a student. That's why we grow in love. So, anyway, I have, you know, I want to tell you a little bit about the beginning. Norman said that 1963, when he came, there were two meetings. There were four meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. And here they are. Lewis and Moor Park in Studio City, the mother group. St. Stephen's Church in Gowran Yucca in Hollywood. Sunday afternoon, the Royal Palms on Southwest Lake in Los Angeles. And Tuesday night on Magnolia, the rear apartment in Burbank, California. Now in 1962, there was only two meetings, the mother group on Rhodes and Moore Park, and a Tuesday night meeting at 8:30 on Magnolia Boulevard, the rear apartment in Burbank, California. Jimmy Kinnon was pretty much the secretary of the Saturday night, or the Friday night meeting on Rhodes and Moore Park. But Bill and Zona were the ones that held the meeting in Burbank on Tuesday night. So there was two meetings in 1962. Well, I want to show you a picture. The only picture that I know of in existence of Jimmy Kinnon, who saved your life and saved my life. And Zona, who was secretary of the Tuesday night meeting, and Penny Kennedy, who was a nurse that I took to, and because she didn't drive, she lived by me, and I took her to the meetings all the time. Jimmy died, Queen. Penny died, using again, when she went back to her nursing thing. This beautiful, beautiful African lady, Zona, died. Her and Bill had the meeting for maybe 2 years. And then they started using again, both of them. Bill went back to the penitentiary, CRC, and we went to visit him. And he says, I can't make it. I don't know how to do it. I just can't make it in NA. And he had tears in his eyes, real tears. And we never seen him again. And Zona went back to her old profession and was murdered That was our second meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. Not a pretty thing. Breaks my heart. But let me tell you, when Narcotics Anonymous started, wasn't started by Jimmy Kennel, was started by Danny Carlson, you know, sometime in the 40s. It's interesting, Kathy Kennan, Jimmy's daughter, sitting right here in front of me, tremendous inspiration to me, and about a month ago, my wife and I went to visit her and Larry. I don't know how to say this. But there was five children in Jimmy's and Agnes's family. Three of the boys are now dead. One just died a couple years ago. And Marie and Kathy are still alive. And their mother died in 1971. And Jimmy married another lady by the name of Betty in 1977. And so Jimmy was a lonely man. And so he married a woman. And I don't know how to say this, except the fact that when Jimmy died, there was an inheritance that was due to the children, the boys who were still alive, and the two girls, Marie and Kathy. And when they were invited back into their home to pick up their what was left, there was none of Jimmy Kennan's archives. They were completely gone. There was nothing left, absolutely nothing, except a teddy bear and a little something, a few little toys. And that's all they ever got. That's all they ever got. There were archives that were missing that shouldn't have been missing. They should have gone to the children, the biological children of Narcotics and of Jimmy Kennan. They were gone. And then there was the final inheritance that was read. And the boys were given $2,000. Kathy Kennan and her daughter and her sister Marie were given $1 each. That's pretty sad. That is really sad. But that's the rest of the story about Narcotics Anonymous. That's what happens in Narcotics Anonymous when people get involved and don't work the program and become selfish, self-centered, and greedy. But I guess we can thank God that a guy named John that's here tonight has a display of many of Jimmy's first writings. And he has protected them. And he has kept them in a controlled environment. It's been a blessing that that's where they ended up. But still, they belong to Jimmy's offspring. When I seen those last night, there was a knife stuck in my heart for Kathy, because she had a look at that stuff. She didn't know where it was. She didn't know where it went. But there it was. But we need to think that God's hand was on the whole thing. You know? There was another set of archives that were sold to the World Service Office for $50,000. Pretty sad. There were things right after Jimmy died that were put on the internet for sale. Pretty sad. Pretty sad. But you know what? Kathy and Marie are survivors, and we're survivors. And their hearts are bleeding, but not because they have resentments, because they love Narcotics Anonymous. That's the rest of the story. Now let me tell you about the beginning of the story. Danny Carlson. Kathy had got some archives. One page that was an archive, if I can find it. That's why I'm so... look at all my stuff, man. I can't believe it. I'm never disorganized. Don't talk to my wife. Anyway, about a month ago, Kathy probably has one of the most significant letters that was ever brought to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And her sister-in-law sent her a box of junk. Junk. Well, stuff that wasn't of hardly any value. So she took it out. And in the bottom of this box was a letter. And she looked at it. It was a letter from Danny Carlson. I'm going to talk about pregnancy and abortion, if you don't mind. I'm not changing the subject, though. AA got pregnant. And AA was pregnant with a defective baby. And you keep it quiet now. But AA had an abortion. And I'll tell you why it was aborted. Because of this letter right here from Danny Carlson that Kathy just found in the bottom of that junk box. An original. This is a copy. And it was written to a lady who evidently worked with Jimmy. I had to wipe my tears and blow my nose. And anyway, this is why Narcotics Anonymous was aborted. Please forgive the delay in answering. I have been ill. And since recuperating, I have had so many things to do that all correspondence has had to suffer. I say that all the time. Unfortunately, we are temporarily out of the booklet, Our Way of Life. But additional copies are being printed and will be in our hands in about a week. If you still want a copy, let us know. But please include the postage on that letter was 3 cents. This guy, Danny Carlson, was very poor or wanted to get very rich quick. Anyway, so include the postage, 3 cents. We have no funds and find it difficult to meet the many requests for material. For the present, we are enclosing a copy of our fact sheet. This is number one, made up of the questions most frequently asked us. Sheet number two will soon be ready for reproduction. I think you'll find these questions and answers informative. Unfortunately, what you say is true about the prevalence of addiction among so-called recovered alcoholics in AA. Sometimes alcoholism is the basic problem, and sleeping pills or narcotics are used as a substitute by the members. But they cannot be practicing members of AA and live the program if they fool themselves in this way. I'm not denouncing the addicts. I mean it sincerely when I say that I love them. They are my brothers and sisters. Addicts must have their own groups. They can use the AA program with modifications, as we do. But their group must be dominated by addict thinking. They must have the mutual understanding and help that is so necessary in the success of this program. Just as the AA member will tell you, only another alcoholic can help me. So the addict needs another addict to truly understand and fully help him. One of the things an addict has not yet devised is a way to deceive a fellow addict. The guy wasn't that dumb. We are currently receiving many letters from addicts who seek help through AA and fail to find it. For that reason, we believe the weakness lies in the fact that alcoholism and addiction, although basically the same, are, after all, different problems and must be handled differently. Thank you for your interest and your work, helping to make a better world for such forgotten people as the sick addicts. And best wishes for a happy new year. Now the kicker. Cordially, Daniel Carson, Executive Director of Narcotics Anonymous. So we don't have any executive directors now. Thank God. In the bottom of that box was four or five 3x5 cards with coffee stains. But they were notes that Jimmy had written himself about Danny Carlson's Narcotics Anonymous. And this is what he said, four ideas about Narcotics Anonymous. Admit a problem with hardcore drugs. Seek a higher power for help. Inventory and amends. Help others. That was it. And what he's saying about NA, the way it was with Danny Carlson, it's not anonymous. Sought sponsors and outright something. Promoted their ideas and something, had no something. Anyway, but there's another card. And this card says, started in Lexington and New York City. Danny had terminal cancer and died soon after starting several meetings. The best of my knowledge, there were never more than three meetings in New York City, two in Manhattan and one in Harlem. And Kenny died in 1954-55. And I think maybe it was 56, I'm not sure. But then there's some other coffee stains. Or maybe tea stains. Jimmy drank a lot of tea. This one here says, now this is the real thing about the abortion, why it was aborted. Public and radio appearances, and sought help and funds of vocational and job sponsorship from city council and businessmen in the city. In 61 and 62, we tried to interest them in our type of NA. We borrowed something. They had no something on it. They couldn't see it. They couldn't see it our way. First man we tried to reach was a Frank W., a Polish name, who seemed to be trying to hold things together. Later it was a Ray Lopez that we contacted, but who did not want to join us the way we used the adopted traditions. So we went, and they went there. So we went our ways, and they went theirs. Several years later, this was the fifth card. Several years later, still only two meetings scheduled in the city of New York and Harlem that we could locate. A meeting at Rikers Island, as we had adopted with permission from AA in New York City, began to appear in a folder from Rikers with additional step numbers but the last thing is, God help us. And He did. Because this program was aborted. This is 1951. Daniel Carson Major, Dorothy, undersigned. This is the copy of the certificate of incorporation. Okay. And here it says, by holding meetings, discussion groups, under the supervision of competent lecturers, to receive, collect, solicit, raise, and administer funds for the above purpose. So that was Danny Carlson, a good man, but sort of misdirected. How many people know when Narcotics Anonymous started? What year? When? No, that's not true. No. Narcotics Anonymous started in 1952. In the hearts and the minds of three people. Cy Maless, Gilman Henschel, and Jimmy Kinnon. At the North Hollywood AA Club. Three alcoholics that got together in the back room and out there in the patio on an old picnic table and discussed how they could develop a program for Narcotics Anonymous. And that's where AA got pregnant again. And then in October, whenever it was, in 1953, AA had a baby. A healthy baby. A strong baby. Yeah. that baby's getting older and older all the time. It's 50-some years old right now. A beautiful baby. A strong baby. A baby that's having babies. Lots of babies. All over the world. Man. 2003, they had the 50-year reunion in San Diego. 50 years later, 20,000 people at that meeting in San Diego. Wasn't that wonderful? Well, let me tell you something more wonderful than that. In Iran, they had a convention just a year or two ago with 20,000 people in Iran. And it's only been over there about 15 years, 5 years. It's my little sponsor there. He corrects me all the time. But he knows a lot more about what's going on than I do, because Joe is an international connection. With the History Project, we could not do what we're doing without Joe, Indiana Joe. Indiana Joe was just a little boy over in South Bend, Indiana. And he asked me to come after that convention. He asked me, he said, would you come and speak to us where? Where we grow with love. And I said, that sounds pretty good. Well, anyway, somebody asked me to go right after that convention, to go to Memphis. We went to Memphis, did a little history thing, and then Joe got a hold of us, and we went there. And I got to know Joe, and I said, this guy is really unique, you know. This guy loves Narcotics Anonymous like nobody I've ever seen in my entire life. Really. He was so dedicated and so hurt by the damage he's seen in the meetings and things like that. But he was always there, fixing it. He didn't resent the people. He didn't criticize them. He fixed it. That's a man after my own heart. I said, I love that brother. I want him to come to Oregon. He needs to be on the West Coast, where he can put his knowledge, his love, and his ability to work. And so I did. And I convinced him. Well, first I took him out and I showed him the redwoods and everything. And I think it was the redwoods that really attracted him. But he came and he stayed with me for 2 years? 1 year? 1 year. Seemed like 2 years. It was. He couldn't take it anymore. So anyway, but that was good. Now he has his own place. But then, in 4 years ago, I'm not good at math. Tommy from Tacoma asked me to come and do a history presentation at a convention they were having there, and so. I said, well, you know, how long do I have to do it? He said, well, a half hour, 45 minutes. I said, it's not going to work, you know. I said, I got to have an hour or two at least, you know. And now I think I need 2 or 3 hours. But anyway, I said, you're very fortunate, because Jimmy Tanna's daughter moved to Klamath Falls, and she just contacted me, and her and her husband came over to visit me. And I says, I'd like her to participate. Oh, well, she's not an addict, man. We can do that, you know. And I said, well, I'm not very tough, but I was tough that time. I said, hey, man, you know, this is history. If you want history, this lady has more history than anybody in existence in Narcotics Anonymous, because she lived with her father. And he said, well, I'll take it to the boy. Anyway, so they okayed it, you know, and so she went there, and I have actually a picture of her and I don't know, it's here someplace, like all my stuff. So she went there. And that was sort of the springboard of the history project. That's where I met Tacoma Tom for the very first time. And I think Joe met him for the very first time. And Kathy did. So anyway, that was sort of a springboard to what we're doing right now. You know. And Kathy, since then, well, she'll tell you her story tomorrow. So I'm not going to, because I don't want to interrupt what she's doing. So anyway, but that's the springboard to this project. Tommy Tacoma is a carpet layer. That's all he does. And I have a small landscape business that I've been so sick the doctor says I'm not capable of mentally and physically doing my work. But we don't have any money. We're struggling, you know. But Tommy and I started out, actually before Joe got involved, and we went to California, interviewed some people with over 40 years on a program, and then somebody asked us to come to Florida. We went and did that, and then we went to Texas and did something there, and then we went to Oklahoma, and then Washington, and then Tommy went to Utah to visit with Terry Ryan, and we've been doing this video conference all through this process. And then Joe got involved, and he's been going all places and doing all kinds of things. And Joe has a hard time. He gets a job here and there. He's gone to school. I said, man, you need to go to school. You're too educated, too knowledgeable not to be educated and get a degree. And just this year, he got a degree in alcohol and drug counseling. What a blessing for a man with this kind of ability to be part of our fellowship and to continue to educate himself and be more educated so he can help more people. Anyway, this is quite a team. Tommy can't do what Joe does, and I can't do what Joe does, and Joe can't do what I do, and Joe can't do what Tommy does. But the three of us make up a nucleus that's an atomic bomb. That's exploding right now. And it's nothing we did. We just, our higher power said, hey man, do this, do that. And all we said was okay. And so we did it. But I want to tell you something about Narcotics Anonymous and what's happening lately. I told you that I had a lot of problems with Narcotics Anonymous. What happened was in 1985, I got fired from a government job. And that happened because they came out with a search warrant to my house and I knew I was going to get fired. That afternoon, a county sheriff comes to my office, my house, and arrest me for a crime that could put me in prison for 20 years. I got 23 years on a program. How'd that happen? Well, I'll tell you how it happened. It happened by a guy that I sponsored. A guy that started gossiping about me. And he gossiped to the point that it got to the county sheriff. And the sheriff came out and arrested me for a crime that could put me in prison for 20 years. This is a man that I sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. I had to wait 9 months to go to a jury trial. find out that I was not guilty. That was a devastating time in my life. You know what? I never went to an... I had 23 years on a program. I never went to another NA meeting for 17 years. I never set my foot in front of an AA or NA meeting or nothing for 17 years. And then I was about to turn 70, and the World Service Office were having that 50th anniversary in San Diego. And they called me and asked me if I would participate. And I sort of thought about it, you know, and I said, well, yeah, and I got to thinking about it. I said, I know some things about Narcotics Anonymous that if I were to die, and I'm almost 70, and I think the lifespan of man is about 70, if I was to die with this information and not pass it on, it would be a terrible thing, a real loss, you know. Not because of who I am, but because of my knowledge about the beginning, those beginning years. So I agreed to do that. When I went there, I was devastated, you know. I had a vision of hell right in the basement of my house when all this stuff came through. And I became a born-again Christian at that time. Not because I went to church, not because somebody led me in a prayer of repentance or anything like that. But in the basement of my house, I felt so bad about what I had done to my wife and my family, my children, and all this. I had 12 children and, I don't know, half a dozen grandchildren at the time. And I just wanted to die. And I was desperate. So I've had two spiritual awakenings. One is a result of working the steps in 1962, and another one in 1985 for not working the steps. And the second one was more significant than the first one. And I cried out, not specifically to Jesus, but I didn't know what a higher power was. I really didn't, you know. I know there was a God someplace. I said, God, Jesus, Jehovah, whoever you are, if you can save me from this hell that I've created for myself, I'll give you my heart, my soul, my life, my property, my family. Everything I have is yours. I don't want nothing. All I want in life is not to die and go to hell. Because I realized if I was to die and go to hell, it would be dark. There'd be nobody there. I could walk 100 miles. I'd never come to a light post or a pebble in the street or a curb or nothing. And I could walk another 100 miles and there'd be no place to rest and no reference point and no place to go. That wouldn't be the worst part of it. The worst part of it. I would be there, naked. Not physically naked, my body. But my conscience would be naked. I wouldn't be able to justify anything. I wouldn't be able to say it wasn't my fault. Scared the hell out of me. The real hell. Not the one that people talk about where there's whores and prostitutes and drinking and drugs and, you know, smoke-filled rooms. No. It was just me. And I was a sad case. And so that's why I cried out. Anyway, so then I went to church for 17 years. It was pretty good. I learned a lot. I got a tremendous education about the Bible. But by the time I finished with all this education, there was one part of the Bible that I read that said, learning, 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 and never coming to an understanding. And what that meant to me, I got a hell of an education in the Bible. I know a lot about it. In fact, I became a minister. And now I'm a chaplain with the Oregon Department of Corrections. Well, that's a big deal. But you know what? I had a lot of knowledge. But I had no action to put with that knowledge. And it wasn't until I came back to Narcotics Anonymous that I realized the church was part of Narcotics Anonymous, and it was a part that educated me, but not a part that taught me the action to put my knowledge into action. And when I came back to Narcotics Anonymous, I began to practice what I had been preached to and what I had been preaching. And that opened up a whole new spiritual dimension to me. And I became a new creation, a different person. And I loved it because I didn't have the pressure of dishonesty and stealing and adultery and all those things that I had to hide and run from. I became free and I became responsible. But anyway, that's another little part of my story. But the part of my story that I'm really the one to explain is the 50th World Convention. 20,000 people there. And I hadn't been to a convention. Well, we put on the second Pacific Northwest NA Convention in 1979. And I didn't know what I was doing, but we did it. And so anyway, but, you know, that was my experience with conventions. And so I went to this convention. There are 20,000 people. They're all dressed up and looking good and everything. And there's all kinds of things, there's special programs and stuff. And everything is free for me. You know, I get free breakfast, free lunch, free dinner, and a free nice hotel room and everything. And so I go in for breakfast, and I see this guy laying there in front of the restaurant. And here he is, right there. The guy's name is Tom. And he's laying there in front of the door. And people are stepping over him, going in with their tickets to eat. And people sort of look at him. They walk away. And they go in, and they eat. And they look at him, and they go visit with their friends. And I stood there for a while, and I watched this guy. And then I got closer to him. He smelled like crap. And I looked at him, and he smelled like alcohol. And I looked at him, he was unshaven and sickly looking. And I said, "Hey man, how you doing?" "Well, I'm not doing too bad." I said, "Are you hungry?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, come on, let's go eat." So I helped him up. And it smelled bad. And I took him in. Oh, I went to the door, and I said, "I'm taking this guy in to eat with me." I gave him my ticket. "Oh, he doesn't have a ticket." I said, "Yes, he does." I said, "This is his ticket. And he's going in, and I'm going to go in and help him." "Oh, well, she got so confused, she didn't know what to do." So I just walked through the door, and we sat down. And now here we are, eating, you know. 20,000 people. And they walked right over this guy, a newcomer, suffering. So what did I do? So I take this guy by the arm, and we walk down. I say, "I'm going to take you to my room, and we're going to have a, you're going to take a shower, clean up and everything." But he didn't have any pants. His pants was full of crap. And so I said, "Well, so anyway, as we were going to my room, I met guys, everybody, "Oh, hi, Gene, how you doing? I haven't seen you," so on and so forth. I said, "Hey, man, don't tell me that. I need some money, man. This guy needs clothes, needs shirts, he needs underwear, he needs stuff." So by the time I got from point A to point B to my room, I had $70 in my pocket. And when I got there, there was a sack of clothes already there. New pair of jeans, a new shirt, new underwear. Shaving stuff, all kind of stuff. We went in and took a shower, and I went in and I said, I'll have you send your clothes to the laundry, you know." So I checked with the lady there, and I gave them to her, and I said, "Man, that's terrible. I mean, that. If they wash this clothes, it's going to contaminate everything else they got, you know." So I went back and I got the clothes and I threw them in the trash, you know. And so here he was. So here he is later on, wherever he is. So then I take them to the meeting. So they have a meeting that's a replica of the meeting, the Friday night meeting on Yucca and Gower, our mother group. So they have all the old timers there doing a replica of the meeting. And so I take this guy up there, Tom, and they say, hey, who's that guy? He's not invited here, you know. I said, you're having a Friday night meeting, replica, and you don't have a newcomer? I said, I got a newcomer, man. He said, well, we don't have a chair for him. I said, well, then get a chair, you know. And so anyway, so this is what happened. This was the replica of the Friday night meeting. And there Tom is. Shaved, he's still got his beard, but he's shaved up, he's clean, he smells good. And so there he was. But you know what? I couldn't stay for the meeting. I had to leave with Tom because he had diarrhea. And that's exactly what Jimmy Cannon would have done. He wouldn't have stuck it out at the meeting, let the guy shit his pants in the meeting. He'd have taken somebody, help clean him up. And so that's what we did. And so anyway, I was sort of disheartened with what I seen in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And the more I go around, the more I see filthy stories, you know, at conventions. I went to a convention in Portland just 2 months ago. And the week before, I had gone to Seattle to give a talk on the history, and I met this African-American guy with his beautiful young daughter. He had a few years on the program. He's in his 50s. His daughter was 17 years old. She'd been on the program since January of this year, so she didn't have quite a year. So then the next week, I went to the Portland meeting, and there's a guy gets up on Friday night and starts talking about filthy stuff and using the N-word and dealing with his culture and stuff. And then he starts talking about this little African boy went into the jungle to try to become a man, and this gorilla gets him and starts, well, I don't even want to talk about it, but I mean, so this gorilla abuses this boy. And he shows how the gorilla's doing it, like he's the gorilla. And everybody's laughing, except me. I says, I just met these people, brought this young girl in here, and she has to listen to crap like that. I was devastated. But you know what? I hated myself. Because I didn't stand up and go up there on a podium and say, hey man, you go home. You don't belong here. You're not an honorable, respected member of Narcotics Anonymous. You don't belong here. But I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to stop. When somebody disrespects the program that gave me life and saved my life, they're in big trouble. I'll shut them up. When you do something like that and allow that to happen in a convention where there's the public there, could be the mayor of the town, it could be a priest, a minister, a counselor, a probation officer, a bishop, or anybody that's allowed to come there because it's open and you are devastating the program of Narcotics Anonymous, that's wrong. You need to read the traditions. The fourth tradition says we're anonymous and we have freedom. But we don't have freedom to hurt people, and we don't have freedom to bring disgrace on our program of Narcotics Anonymous. It's not that kind of freedom. With freedom,